A Monday morning podcast appeared. Catch it.
Watch out. We got a lot of baseball to talk about because all 30 Major League Baseball teams played multiple games this weekend, and we have to talk about it. Baseball Barbercast starts right now.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbercast, the only baseball podcast in the world that will talk responsibly about the Minnesota Twins rally sausage. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And we will not innuendo.
No, we are going to be as mature as it gets about the Twins sausage party. If you have no idea what we're talking about, probably for the best. But unfortunately, over the next half an hour, you are going to find out. We are going to recap all 15 series over the weekend, beginning, of course, with the sweeps, of which there were multiple, as well as the regular series wins. But Jake, before we get to the actual, you know, box scores and statistics and wins and losses, we have some even bigger news that dropped on us last night, courtesy of Jeff Passan. And I think the funniest thing about this, Jake, the news that our uniform nightmare is soon going to be over, is that this appropriately warranted an all caps breaking from Jeff Passan. Think about what this has come to over the last few months with the new uniforms designed by Nike, produced by Fanatics, whatever the combination that has resulted in us getting to this point with Jeff Passan tweeting all caps breaking the uniforms will be changed back to, I guess, what they were. It has really been one of the more absurd few months that we've had covering this sport.
I'm now like sifting through Jeff Passan's use of the word breaking, right? Like, I would imagine he didn't use breaking for the, say, the Mets signing Harrison Bader, right?
I mean, this is something every offseason I am, you know, perpetually fascinated by is, yeah, what warrants it? What right. gets the all caps? And this, I think, as goofy as it is, for how much of it has been one of the biggest stories in baseball, it's absolutely one of the biggest pieces of news he could drop on us. And I think we sort of knew that this has been sort of being discussed and argued in the background by the MLBPA, who has been complaining about it. But as we talked about at the beginning when this all started, this has been a fan issue too. This has been a league reputation issue. And now it seems like with Jeff's reporting that at some point, although not necessarily like later this week, as Jeff writes in the story, at least the memo says, at the latest, at the beginning of the 2025 season. So we might still have a full season this year of tiny letters.
Dude, but, in 15 years when we're watching someone's Hall of Fame tape and there's like footage of tiny letters, we'll be like, that was 2024.
So that's true. And that's just assuming that it'd be even funnier if they do manage to fix it like in the next couple of months, because then it's like, whose highlights from just the first 2 months of this season, like probably like Mookie, right? Like Mookie's probably would be one in terms of,
I mean, Ohtani's Dodgers debut with the tiny letters.
Ohtani's Dodgers debut. Now, I feel like the Dodgers aren't as, their jerseys haven't, you know, again, some teams have been more egregious than others, but the point is, this is going to change. And as you pointed out last night when you tweeted about this, and this is something we talked about as soon as this became an issue a couple months ago, it is wild how quickly we get used to it. And when you go and see the old letters, and we talked about it when the Royals decided to, you know, be rebellious and just use the old letters in spring training. And then I think on like opening day, right? And then they were told, no, sorry, you got to get in line and get with the small letters. It is so funny how we are now going to be like, whoa, that's what it looked like. It's like, yeah, that was just last year, not that long ago.
You can read them. You know, just because we got used to it doesn't mean it was good. I want to be clear about that. I'm very happy that I'll be able to read the back of these uniforms again. But it does just, it's like when you're on the on deck circle swinging a donut. You know, you take that off. You're like, whoa, that is a light bat. That is.
Right, right. Which, and then the other thing about this that makes me laugh so much is, remember, like the reason they thought they were doing this was it was performance wear. And this is an interesting thing. And this is kind of what I said when we first found out they were doing new uniforms before we saw how crappy they looked. This is from Jeff's story. The memo to the players included this, quote, "This has been entirely a Nike issue. At its core, what has happened here is that Nike was innovating something that didn't need to be innovated." And that gets at what I had been wondering the whole time, which is that quite literally, we say this in passing on our social media all the time, who asked for this? Who among the players who were wearing these uniforms to play Major League Baseball were like, you know what we need? We need thinner jerseys that show when I'm really sweaty. I don't know who asked for it.
None of them did. Who asked for this was probably some executive at Nike and or Fanatics who was trying to, or MLB, was trying to cut costs. That's all this is. No player walked into anybody's office and demanded these uniforms. There's absolutely no chance. I do think it's interesting, worth noting, that the MLBPA's statement just slams Nike and absolves Fanatics. The Athletic's Evan Drellick tweeted, I guess, that the MLBPA received $44 million in licensing revenue from Fanatics last year, which is very, therefore, understandable why they would not trash someone who gave them, or, you know, who provided them with $44 million. Understandable. This is not like a scandal or a big deal. It's just kind of a behind the scenes, a little bit look at like how these motivations work for different parties. Important to understand, not a huge development. I'm just excited that MLB recognized there was a problem. Now, yes, it took too long. And, you know, I talk about the Jimmy Neutron theory where you don't deserve praise for rectifying a problem that you yourself created. Where every Jimmy Neutron episode was like, Jimmy builds a, you know, robot that takes over the city. And then he saves everyone from the robot and everyone's clapping for Jimmy. Like, he built the robot in the first place. You know what I mean? And so MLB oversaw or created this issue. And therefore, they don't need a standing ovation for fixing it. However, I am glad that instead of just ignoring everyone forever, they did eventually come around.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. Now, the other, just one other point on this from Jeff's story, which I just want to read because it's hilarious. So the pants, right? So we focus a lot on the letters, and those, no one could possibly say that those were not different, right? But the pants, there was a lot of debate about, like, are they actually different? There was a point at some point where the league came out and was like, no, the pants are the same. You're imagining this. The pants are not see-through. It's just a matter of the blah, blah, blah. This part in the memo is so funny. The pants, which according to the memo, the new pants or new old pants, I should say, the pants, which according to the memo will, quote, return to the higher quality zipper used in 2023, had myriad issues, including the see-through fabric, lack of tailoring, and rips and tears that players believed unnecessary. I just want to know about the higher quality zipper. What does that mean?
I'm going to a ballpark today. I'll ask to see someone's low quality zipper.
I was going to say, the zipper was not something I had realized was an issue. We've seen all these other things because they've been very blatant, but this is great. We're getting even more details about the pants. So congratulations to the players on, I guess winning this. Now I think the fact that, like, here's the last thing about this, because we don't know exactly when it's going to change. I kind of hope we don't. I kind of hope that this just drops on some random Tuesday in August. And it's like,
people
whoa,
just show up
back
in the new unis. Yeah.
Like, there's no way that's going to happen. I'm honestly kind of worried. This doesn't actually matter, but I'm kind of worried that because this has been true for a lot of the other things involving the jerseys this year, good and bad, that some teams are going to get them before others. Like, that seems extremely plausible, which makes me think that maybe they do just wait until 2025 to get it all fixed. Maybe it's an after the All-Star break thing. I could see that being a very plausible thing, that if they start to get them and then they roll them out on that Friday after the All-Star game. I have no idea, but that's the last part about this that is going to be very funny to watch is when exactly they appear back on our TVs.
All right, let's move on to what happened instead of what they were wearing. We had five sweeps. Well, let's say 4.5 sweeps over the weekend. We will explain. But we have to begin on the south side of Chicago. Sports are beautiful because they make the impossible possible, okay? Whether it's the 1980 U.S. Olympic hockey team or UMBC knocking off the University of Virginia in 2018 in the tournament, in the men's tournament, upsets are what it's all about. And for the Chicago White Sox, who entered the weekend 3 I said three wins and 22 losses to sweep the Rays at home was just delightful. The White Sox doubled their season win total over this weekend, taking all three from Tampa and doing it in different ways each game. On Friday, 9-run offensive explosion. On Saturday, Andrew Benintendi walk-off home run. And on Sunday, Eric Fetty delivering 8.1 strong innings.
And I just like that, you know, the first game on Friday, they put up a bunch of runs early, and then it's like hanging on for dear life. I mean, the bullpen, Flexen was good, and then the bullpen is just leaking runs, and you're like, oh no, oh no, oh no, White Sox. And then Saturday, oh my gosh, this Benintendi performance. We talk about upsets. This was Benintendi, who entered the night with zero home runs and ended the night with two. I mean, including a walk-off that was absolutely blasted. And you think, like, where was this? Where has this been? The crowd was there, and it was almost like Andrew Benintendi just needed to have some amount of life jolted back into him to remember, wait a minute. I'm not one of the worst players in Major League Baseball. I might not be one of the best, but I'm definitely not one of the worst. And there you saw it. There you saw a swing, two swings like that. And you're like, yeah, that's Andrew Benintendi. Like, in theory, like, do I think he's now going to go on to become an all-star? No. But still, you just saw that immediately. It's like, oh, right, he can still do that. And then on Sunday, it's just Eric Fetty just being a baller. I mean, he's been fantastic this season. He's been exactly what they could have hoped when they signed him to a two-year deal from, you know, bringing him back over the KBO MVP. And he even said it after the game yesterday. He's like, if you had told me a year ago, 2 years ago, that I'd be pitching into the ninth and, you know, striking out 9-10 guys, like, I'd be laughing at that too. He's a totally different pitcher, and knowing Fetty a little bit, that it's really, really cool for him to have that opportunity.
The White Sox still suck. It's just, yeah, rain on that parade. But it is a great reminder that the joy of a weekend is real, right? Even though Chicago will come nowhere near the postseason, in fact, they might be the furthest away from the postseason. If you are a fan who went to any of these three games at home over the weekend, it was worth the price of admission. You got to care and invest in the product on the field, in the wins and the losses, and that is great. Even amongst the disastrous 162 game slodge this is going to be, White Sox fans got a glimmer of hope, and that's awesome.
And it's so cool because it's like, yes, you can. I totally understand the cynics, like, don't go to the game, don't give Jerry Reinsdorf your money, like, it's not worth it. It's like, that's all true, that's all fair. I get that. But it's like, listen, you're a White Sox fan, you're a White Sox fan. You know this season is toast. That is so beautiful about the sport, is that we still, for some reason, because this is what fandom is, we still care and we're still happy when our team wins, even if it's not leading to anything at the end. And that's what this weekend was for White Sox fans. And listen, it could be their only sweep all season. There is a chance that it is the only sweep they have all season. And so you gotta, you know, just cherish it. And I think they did. It was really cool to see.
Don't give Jerry Reinsdorf your money, White Sox fans. Just sneak into the ballpark. Okay, a couple more sweeps to get to before we take a break. The Phillies sweeping the Padres in San Diego, the site of the most unbelievable baseball moment I've ever seen live, which was the 488 Kyle Schwarber home run in the 2022 NLCS. Seeing Schwarber in that stadium is just like, he hit the ball where? But in this series, I guess the main notes are the Phillies are getting the rotation has been superb over the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, them and Seattle have been like far and away the best over the last 2-3 weeks.
Yeah, but Ranger Suarez has gone from plucky, stocky lefty with big nuts who shoves in October to like elite. Starting
the NL All-Star game? Question mark. I mean, he's gonna be, you know, in the mix there. He's fantastic. And I think what we're seeing from Ranger this year is kind of a perfect blend of, we knew he's been a ground ball king, you know, since he was 18. Now he's getting enough swing and miss as well that he can just dominate and just pitch deep into games, because he can get a weak contact and get early count outs, or he can carve you up. He's got it all, and it's super impressive. And he's of course the fourth highest paid pitcher on the staff, but man, he's one of the best lefty starters we have in the game.
He's probably the fifth highest paid pitcher on the staff, Jordan.
Well, he's making more than Christopher Sanchez, I assume, but in ARB.
Spencer Turnbull.
Turnbull's making $2 million. I assume Ranger's at more than that in ARB by now. But the point is he's one of the best lefty pitchers in the game, and we should not be treating him just like this cool development story anymore.
Oh, no. It's a big fat W now. And it's very Frombery, the whole thing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. It's a very similar type of mix. It's been a delight to watch. The other Phillies thing is Alec Bohm is hitting 500 over the last 2 weeks with 3 homers and 8 doubles. He is locked in. His defense is now totally fine. It's not great. It will never be great. It's totally fine, which is a huge W. And he seems to be elevating himself into so he's been hitting fourth or, fifth on this team for a while. And it always kind of felt like he hadn't earned that spot necessarily, but he has now backdoored his way into yes, that is exactly where Alec Bohm should be hitting this lineup. That's been a huge W for them. And again, dude, this team is, I think they're 11-2 in their last 13.
Yeah. I mean, they're up to 19-10. They have one of the best records in baseball now. So yeah, they're right there. They'd be winning or being in first place in a lot of divisions. You know, they're still a game and a half behind Atlanta, but they're doing exactly what they need to do to kind of stay close there. And, you know, Taiwan Walker comes back. He's throwing 90-91, but he pitches into the seventh. I don't really know why he went back out for the seventh. That was very strange, him coming off injury, but nice to see him kind of pull his weight after kind of wondering what that was going to look like, considering how good Spencer Turnbull had looked. And then I also say, great to see Stott hit a couple homers. He's really been scuffling offensively to start the season. I know he's more at the bottom of the lineup, but he can at least, against righties, he can poke one out every once in a while.
Nick Castellanos hit his first home run of the season.
That did happen. And then he drew 3 walks yesterday, which is inconceivable if you've been watching his at-bats this year. But good for him. Maybe he can get going. That's the thing about what's so encouraging about the Phillies is that this offense is still not even close to clicking, on all accounts. Not even close. But they're healthy. They are one of the healthiest teams in the league by far. And so that's the things that they also have going for them. But really impressive. And then for San Diego, I don't know, man. There's still enough going well for them that I'm this team doesn't suck. But these are the kinds of series you'd like to see a little bit more fight against one of the best teams in the league. And it was not. The pitching is just so up and down at this point. Yeah. It's just there's so many new faces, and it's just not the bullpen. There's so many guys where they're just alternating, having good outings. And it's just not enough consistency against a team like Philadelphia. So at home, that was a pretty disappointing showing from them.
Let's move up the coast to Anaheim, where the Minnesota Twins took all 3 games, sweeping the Angels. The Angels are 1-9 in their last 10. They have certainly fallen off. They kind of stink. But let's focus on the Twins, who have rolled out a W7 against the White Sox and now the Angels to catapult themselves back into safety, right? April is just not about fumbling the bag, and now they are back in the mix, which is good.
Yep.
Let's lock into the home run sausage, please. Can you explain?
Okay. I mean, honestly, it's hard. I want everyone to watch. Watch is very important. The clip of Rocco Baldelli describing the sausage, because essentially, at some point over the weekend, Carlos Santana hit a home run. And when he returned back to the dugout, as we now have, home run props and whatever, you got the Trident with the Mariners, you got the Homer Hose with the Orioles, you got players, receive something when they get back to the dugout. That is very standard. It's a prop, bigger, maybe it's some sort of costume, whatever. Anyway, but the slow-mo shot of Carlos Santana returning to the dugout, included him, you know, doing his jump up, and we're dapping everybody up. And then out of nowhere, a large sausage encased, it was not just an open sausage, some sort of large sausage was tossed his way, and he sort of like caught it or kind of hit off his hands. And then we were like, what was that? What? Well, where did that come from? And so Rocco Baldelli was asked about it after the game.
It's a summer tangy sausage is what it is. I actually looked at the package yesterday. It's bringing us a lot of hits and runs and stuff. So I'm all for it. I mean, for anyone that hasn't been following, it's a substantial packaged, you know, sausage that Jeffers has been carrying around in his bag and throwing at people when we score runs and hit homers.
Not just what he said, but the tone with which he described it was
exasperation.
Exasperation. It was truly like, and my favorite part about the quote is he's like, at some point he says something along the lines of like, I'm not an adult. And then he's like, well, I am more of an adult than some of the guys in the other room. He basically explains where the sausage came from and whatever. And then he expresses, which brings us to our main topic of this today, is how concerning is a non-refrigerated sausage, whether it's still in a bag or not, to just be hanging out at a major league dugout where it is warm and where there are sweaty hands and sweaty other things going on. So what do you think?
As long as it's wrapped, you're fine.
Yeah. But we're tossing it around a lot. We're asking for trouble. I think that's Rocco's concern.
Yeah. Now, this is not even close to the grossest rally item that I have come across in my relatively long life around the game of baseball. And I would like to tell a quick story, Jordan.
Mm-hmm. Please.
I believe it was in 2015. My Washington University Bears were in Florida playing a series against Case Western Reserve University. The field we played at was about half mile away from a lake. And what that meant was birds would like scoop up fish from the lake and then just like drop them on the field. And so there were like fish bones everywhere, whatever. During the game, a bird dropped a fish into the opposing dugout, Case Western University's dugout. They took the fish, put it on ice in a cooler, and used it as a rally item for the remainder of the week of games. So like someone's responsibility was to like roll this wild fish dead in the cooler back and forth to keep it from stinking. I texted the coach of Case Western this morning to confirm this story. He said the osprey that nested in the light poles of that stadium dropped them into our bullpen. We taped it to the dugout pole and it was our rally fish. I made more than one phone call to local taxidermists to see if they could preserve it. We could not. We kept it in the cooler for a few days, but ultimately we had to pitch it. So
more than one call.
More than one call. Again, the rally sausage is not sanitary if it opens, but on the spectrum of wacko things that happen in the college level, this is totally fine.
Yeah. Let me just read from the MLB.com story, just a little bit more background for those who didn't see the clip and aren't going to go watch this. Last week in Chicago, while the Twins were looking for anything to reverse their early season struggles, Kyle Farmer put out a packaged summer sausage in the clubhouse. Quote, it was in my locker and I didn't want to eat it, so I put it on the clubhouse table. Instead of eating it, hitting Coach
David... Wait. He just had a raw link just floating around his bag.
I don't know why that part is not explained, right? Why was it in his locker?
Whatever. Anyway,
instead of eating it, hitting coach David Popkins placed it by the dugout bat rack. It's that been there ever cool. since. Ryan Jeffers throws it at teammates following a big hit. He made sure the sausage was transported to California. So, how is it transported to California? Who, again, like, when you're a big leaguer, you can kind of tell, this isn't, you say this is a good thing or a bad thing. Like, if they tell the clubby, like, hey, man, like, I need the sausage in California, like, it's going to get there. It's It's gonna end up there. I don't know who, like, that's the kind of thing that if you're Ryan Jeffers, it doesn't have to be your problem. Like, you can just say, like, hey man, like I need a sausage in the dugout when we get there in Anaheim. And it was, and it worked, and they swept the Angels, and now they go mop of the White Sox, sweep of the Angels. And then here's the really interesting thing, Jake.
They got the White Sox this week, right?
They got the White Sox again this week. But wait a minute. Were they in Chicago last week? No, they were in Minnesota. Okay, so then the story is wrong because it said in Chicago. They weren't in Chicago. It was against Chicago. Now they're going to Chicago. So yes, the sausage will presumably make its way to the South Side. And now they're going to need it because the White Sox are hot.
If the Twins win the World Series, I'll eat the sausage. All right, let's keep rolling. The Astros, I guess it's a sweep, a little dusting. Two games in Mexico City. These are always hilarious games because the air is so thin. Mexico City is 2,000 feet closer to the heavens than Denver. Okay, so we have all these issues with the ball flying in Denver. Yeah. And Mexico City is like even more up there. Okay, yeah. And so if you get the ball in the air, it's going to go. All right, Astros took both of these games. There have been 8 home runs this year, Jordan, that have been hit over 455 feet. 8 over 455. Half of those were in Mexico City over the weekend.
And because that's the thing is, like, it's an extra 20 or 30 feet is so much. It's so much, when we're talking about. And again, that's how you end up. And by the way, I thought it was going to be worse. I mean, the scores for these games were, you know, the Astros won on Sunday 8-2 and on Saturday 12-4, right? Like, I thought this could have been way uglier. And, you know, maybe with another better lineup and for Colorado, you know, we get a little bit more of a fight there. But as expected, this is pretty much what I expected. Again, the Astros are 9-19, so it's not like their season is saved, but this was good. This was what they needed to happen. Fromber looked solid. That was really nice to have him back. And now they kind of can go from here and hopefully, you know, continue to hit. They now go home where they will face Cleveland, which will probably be a slightly tougher task than beating Colorado in Mexico.
Yordan Alvarez looked great. He's the type of guy, Jordan, who would do some real damage in the Mexican League, I think.
Yeah. How old of a Yordan Alvarez could still be putting up a 900 OPS in Mexico? Probably like 45, I would say, if he wants to keep playing down there. So yes, we will see. Hopefully not. I want to keep Yordan in the big leagues. That'd be nice.
One kind of Debbie Downer thing. We can't put a team in Mexico City.
Mm.
We really can't. Like, it's a it's a great city. It would be awesome to have another team not in America.
Yeah.
But it's Coors is already silly.
I know.
Like, this is,
but this here, is here's, not what, a I viable here's what I would argue. If the Rockies cannot be saved because of their front office and ownership situation, maybe we can get some smarter, more innovative folks to do it in Mexico City. Even if it's an even harder task, I would love to see some people some smart front office folks try and figure that out. Because again, Rockies probably doomed until things really change over there. So anyway, good for Houston for really taking care of business down there. And obviously it was also like 95% Astros fans. So it seemed like a damn good time. Jake, let's take a break. And when we return, we will talk about the Nationals and Marlins, because that was not technically a sweep, as they will play another game today. We'll be right back on Baseball Breakfast.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbcast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. You all tune in because you want to hear about the battle for fourth place in the NL East. Marlins, Nats, boy. The Nats took all three. They are definitively better than the Marlins. The Marlins were up 7-0 in the second inning on Sunday and found a way to bungle that game. They will play one more today on Monday in the bizarre wraparound series. So I guess it's not a sweep. It is an opportunity. I like the Nats' chances to complete the four-gamer.
Yeah, we have pitching matchup today is Jake Irvin and Trevor Rogers. Listen, the Marlins are a catastrophe. Craig Mish, who knows the Marlins better than anybody, tweeted, worst March, April I've ever seen in Marlins history. Truly abysmal baseball. Mistakes all over the place. Basic plays not executed. I've seen every season. Rock bottom, 6-23. Oh, man. Mish bringing the heat there. So Marlins, yikes. Push them aside. Nationals, man. Listen, yes, still probably a fourth place team, but there's some good things happening on this team, man. There's and listen, yesterday, why were they down 7-0? Because Patrick Corbin got absolutely blasted again and is still in this rotation as the four-time defending champion worst pitcher in baseball, which is just incredible, right? But like, it's not just, again, C.J. Abrams is awesome, and he's been everything you could possibly hope for. More Mackenzie Gore, like those core pieces that you're building around. Yes, but the rejuvenations of Jesse Winker and now Nick Senzel, who broke his thumb during fielding practice, like during BP on opening day. I was there. He was basically scratched like right before opening day. I was like, oh my God, Nick Senzel hurt again in Cincinnati. It was such a bummer. I was like, oh, we'll never, he's never going to make an impact. He's been absolutely raking since he came back. And that they've seemingly hit on those two while Joey Gallo and Eddie Rosario have been like catastrophically bad. But they've done pretty well with some of these veteran pickups. And Senzel and Winker have both just been awesome for them. And that's why their offense is not bad. It's not an abomination, and they can kind of string a rally together. So they're spunky.
Two Nats things. One, on our document, Jordan, you have a bunch of exclamation points next to question marks, and I think that is what the 2024 Washington Nationals are all about. Just Jesse Winker.
Yeah, Jesse Winker. That's, what? Good what? For Jesse Winker, who, like, man, talk about, I thought was cooked, injured, whatever. He looks like 2021 Jesse Winker. Yep. I mean, he really does. And then just, I wanted to shout out Jacob Young, their center fielder, the national center fielder right now.
He's so fun.
He's one of the fastest players in baseball. Again, sorry if I'm jinxing it. Dude hasn't been caught yet. He's stolen 21 bases to start his career and has been everything you could hope for. He's, I hate to say this, but he's basically what they has been hoping Victor Robles could be for the last few years. I know Robles has a much higher prospect pedigree, but Nats are fun, man. Good for them. I hope they get the mop done today.
I'm kind of done Marlins. With K-Bear Ruiz. Like, I know missed some time because he was sick. I know he homered over the weekend, but
he's got a lot to prove, I guess what I would say. He has a long way to go before we're like, oh yeah, he's definitely a part of their obvious future. So I
Nats
agree.
Need to exactly. Let Riley Adams cook. Okay. Let's move on to the twos out of threes. And let's begin in Baltimore, where the Orioles lost the series to the A's in bizarre fashion. They were up in the ninth inning of all three games. Unfortunately, you actually have to finish the ninth inning. And Craig Kimbrel bungled it on Friday and on Sunday, blowing two saves. The A's take two out of three. Very bizarre sequence in the Sunday game where Kimbrel walks a hitter on four pitches, only fastballs, throws two more pitches, doesn't look right. They come out of the dugout to like check on him. And they're like, you good? He's like, yeah, I'm fine.
And I'm Craig Kimbrel.
I'm Craig Kimbrel.
I'm good, man.
Full count against Kyle McCann, who is some,
not
a catcher.
Related. Not related to Brian McCann.
Or James McCann.
Or James McCann. Despite Kyle McCann being a catcher from Georgia. Like, nope, not related.
What are we doing? Anyway, 7 or 8 pitch at bat to Kyle McCann. Craig Kimbrel allows a 2-run go-ahead homer. A's hold on for the win. He's then removed from the game right after the homer, so he doesn't face three batters, and I believe he is going to go on the IL. Just a weird sequence of events. The Orioles have some real bullpen problems. I kind of want to talk about this on Wednesday because I think we should give the Oakland Athletics a little bit of love. The two guys who closed out the wins for them, Mason Miller on Friday and Lucas Ersig on Sunday, are two of the most shocking, improbable development stories that we've had recently in baseball.
Yeah. So let me just do Ersig quickly because Mason Miller definitely deserves more attention. Lucas Ersig was a second round pick as a third baseman out of an NAIA school in California. had a rocket arm. Like he pitched a little, like everybody always kind of knew like, eh, well, if it doesn't work, you know, you just put him on the mound. He was pitching
at Brewers, Cal. Right?
Brewers. Yes. Brewers originally. And then I believe he was just I think he was claimed on waivers at some point last year by Oakland, and he's just been letting it eat. And he has, and the velo's up even more this year, and it's kind of a funky slot, and he's just deal. I mean, he is throwing, again, if Mason Miller wasn't in the same bullpen, Lucas Hersick would be a pretty big story on his own when you just watch him.
There's also all the stuff. I mean, he has alcoholism where he's kind of gotten that under control, and I think he's been sober for 4 years.
Well, right.
But that kind of derailed his minor league career as a hitter.
Yes.
And now that he is healthier, he's just throwing 100.
Exactly. No, he was, and it's not like he reached Triple A as a hitter. Like this was not one, sometimes, you know, you have, you know, conversion stories where it's like quickly an A ball. It's like, there's no way this guy's going to hit.
Michael Givens.
Yeah, there are a lot of, you know, we've seen, you know, position players become good relievers, but he was making his way up. And as you mentioned, you know, he had some off the field issues that kind of made it difficult for him to really realize that dream with Milwaukee. Gets on the mound and he was pretty good for the last year. He appeared in 50 games for the A's last year. I don't blame people for not necessarily noticing, which brings us to Mason Miller, because same thing. Mason Miller makes it so good for Lucas Hersick. Like, he's awesome, but he ain't the closer, because the closer is Mason Miller. And Mason Miller, who we talked about on the show before, but I mean, now he has, after what he did in Yankee Stadium last week, really kind of elevated him to a level where it's like, wait a minute, what's going on? And I saw the A's, you know, I saw them in Cleveland a couple weeks back, talked to Dallas Braden about him for a while before the game. And he was just talking about his sequence, what he was showing early on the season in Texas. He had a couple at bats against Semien and Seager, where if you go back and watch those, you realize like there ain't a lot of guys making those dudes look lost or overmatched. And that is what is, I mean, he is the hardest throwing pitcher in Major League Baseball right now. So that's a good place to start. But it's just everything about it, the mound presence, the command to just hit exactly at the top of the zone every time. He's the best, maybe the best reliever in the world right now. And that's a title that clearly fluctuates because that's the nature of relievers. But if you tell me he's the best reliever on earth right now, I can't tell you you're wrong. He's got 25 strikeouts in 10 appearances. He's only walked 4. He's allowed 2 runs. And this was not what we expected when we first heard about him at Waynesburg University in Pennsylvania 4 years ago.
And his outing on Friday with Kimbrel blowing it in the top half, and then Miller striking out Gunnar Henderson, who has been one of the best hitters in the world this year, on 3 straight heaters, just blowing it by him.
Did it to Juan Soto last week. Same thing. Here, hit it. Can't touch it.
So impressive. Mason Miller is an absolute delight. A's are a little bit better than everyone thinks. Yeah. Let's move on to the next series.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do Cardinals over Mets.
Again, we have a couple from this weekend where, same with, you know, Mariners over D-backs. You win the first two, but you lose on Sunday. We've talked many times how, like, losing on Sunday, whether or not you win the series, it just sucks. Like, even winning on Sunday is just so great, because then we feel better about you on Monday morning no matter what. And that's how we kind of take stock in these things. But the Cardinals did get the first two in this one. The offense starting to show a little bit better. And then Mark Vientos makes sure that the Mets do not get swept. Harrison Bader first, making sure they stay alive late in that game. And then Vientos with an absolute rocket, which he can do every once in a while. And this was quite a timely home run for the Mets to kind of make a statement there. And the Mets too, you know, you look in the standings, they're sitting at 14-13, Cardinals at 13-15. They're both in this kind of middle melee of the National League where we're still trying to find out if they're actually good or not. And so I felt like this series kind of represented that for both teams.
Sonny Gray outstanding on Saturday. The only run he allowed, I believe, was the Pete Alonso 200th career home run, which he knocked in the Mets City Connect uniforms, which look solid. Yeah. Need more purple. Look solid.
Sonny Gray's been. Whew.
Yeah.
He's been absolutely, I know he was hurt to start the year. He's basically been excellent in all four outings so far.
Let's go to Toronto, where Shohei Ohtani was booed. Why was Shohei Ohtani booed? Because the day before he signed with the Los Angeles Dodgers, bad reporting put him on a plane to Toronto, where he was to sign a contract with the Blue Jays. Obviously, that did not happen, but that situation got the hopes of Blue Jays fans up, understandably. Okay. Since then, Ohtani has been nothing but kind and gracious to the Blue Jays fans in the city of Toronto. It was not a that entire situation was not his fault in any way, right? Like, if you want to talk about the gambling stuff, like, we've talked about it at length, but like, he deserves some blame for being oblivious that the person, blah, 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 blah.
That's not why he's getting booed. So
I don't know. I understand. Yeah. But I'm saying plane thing is just not Ohtani's fault at all.
Right,
that being said, as someone who, we are anti-boo.
Yeah.
This I felt a little bit more okay about, because it was the correct, maybe, way for Blue Jays fans to like voice their frustration with what went down. Like, you can't boo.
That's true.
JP Morosi.
That's true. Right? I will say though, it does. This is kind of getting at what I was going to bring up here, which is, would he have gotten booed if the plane thing never happened? But we knew that he met with the Blue Jays and we knew that they were like the runner up and he really strongly considered them. Or is it the opposite? Do they cheer him because they're like, man, you gave us a shot? Like, the Blue Jays got Shohei to go to Dunedin. All right.
That happened.
Raise the banner. Okay. I still think that's a legitimately impressive. And Ohtani said that. He was like, they're a very impressive organization. Like, he said all the right things. I don't think he's BSing, right? I do think he strongly considered it. Do I think they would have cheered him because of that? Maybe not. But I don't think he would get, I think it entirely is the plain thing. I don't think it's just that he didn't sign there.
Well, because
it doesn't make any sense, because remember, it wasn't his fault.
There were 8 hours where Blue Jays fans were like, we're getting Shohei Ohtani. Like, 3 hours, really. Like, that was a feeling that was in all of their hearts, okay? Yeah. That was real. And so I don't blame them for taking it out in that fashion. Once they did it once, they really did it in the first at-bat, and then Ohtani immediately homered, which was just so good. And then he gets back into the dugout, and all the Dodgers players are booing him in the dugout. It was an awesome sequence.
Yeah, so good for Toronto for getting a game on Sunday, because it was looking like they were just getting their ass absolutely whooped in the first two games, and show some amount of resilience on Sunday was nice to see. But Toronto's offense is really just, it's the same energy as last year in a lot of respects, which is a good transition to the New York Yankees, who went to Milwaukee. And on Friday, this is another good example of how sequencing can impact how we feel about a team. The Yankees' loss on Friday was ugly. Ugly, ugly, ugly. Sure, it's an extra innings loss, so how bad could it be? But asking Michael Tonkin, who you claimed 20 minutes before the game, or activated, whatever, would be like, hey, man, can you get us multiple innings in extras? They get walked off. Their offense was just so tough to watch. So many, just bad, 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 bad. That's how you're feeling on Friday night. And then how do they respond? They put up, 30 runs over the next couple days, and Aaron Judge is heating up, and you're like, oh my God, look, here they come. And so it was a nice response from the Yankees, because that was not pretty on Friday night.
Judge channeling his inner Diego Maradona, going full hand of God with the slide on Sunday. Double play turn. Judge slides in a second. Ball caroms off his outstretched hand.
Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah. That's a hilarious comp, because to compare breaking up a double play with stopping a goal.
Scoring a goal.
No, I know. But the difference between that in terms of like win probability, especially in that game, ended up being
hilarious. 7-run inning.
I know. And the judge is like, I always slide like that, which seems to be true. And now we have to discuss whether that, I don't care that much about that part. If he wants to risk his fingers every time he does that, then that's fine with me.
My take on this is for the Brewers and their fans, that's a bad bounce. That's just a bad bounce.
Yeah.
Don't let up 30 runs.
Brewers are good. At some point, it's hard to give up 30 runs back. So I know there was a lot of position players pitching, but including Jake Bowers, like in the same game that he homered against the Yankees, had to come back in and keep pitching. And hey, we got to shout him out, man. Carlos Rodon, who unfortunately for him, the face of the sweaty uniforms, every picture that's like, we're getting new uniforms because Carlos sweated too much.
I kind of want to write about him in that way.
So funny. Go for it. You'll see him this week. It's hilarious. It's like, yeah, it's not, he's not the only sweaty guy, but he's apparently one of the sweatiest by our stupid new uniform standards. So anyway, good for the Yankees to kind of course correct there. And yeah, if Judge is heating up, now we can really watch out. Watch out.
We kind of buried the lead here because the series between the two best teams in baseball occurred over the weekend. Two best records, the Cleveland Guardians and the Atlanta Braves. And we preview this as a prove-it series for the Guardians. And even though they lost the series 2-1, I think they showed well. The Guardians did. They were up, I believe, after the sixth inning in all three games. Hunter Gaddis, who had been great for them, had a rough weekend out of the pen. I think they're up two runs in the eighth on Sunday. Gaddis blows it. Matt Olson ties it on a single. And then the Braves walk off an extras and an Austin Riley walk-off single. But the Guardians are pretty good. That's a good baseball team. They're a good baseball team. I don't know if they're a great baseball team yet, but they're definitely better than we gave them credit for at the beginning of the season and are, like, obviously legitimate contenders in the division. Atlanta, quickly, this is the best team in baseball still. I don't know if I want to do it right now, Jordan, but I think we're getting close to needing to have a Marcelo Ozuna conversation. Like,
I mean,
he's been the best hitter in baseball. And
I would say the most encouraging. Yeah. The interesting thing with Atlanta is that the offense has been driven by Ozuna and Michael Harris, you know, so
and
far
Darno.
More than Darno, right? Who's now been playing all the time because Murphy's hurt. I think the most encouraging thing from them is Chris Sale, who allows a leadoff homer to Kwan and then just nails after that. The Braves were pretty much in control on Friday. But then Cleveland, you know, bounces back with the win on Saturday. And then they were in on Sunday. Cleveland now goes to Houston, where that will be another opportunity. It's like, okay, prove it against the Astros. Well, the Astros are 9-19, but that is still going to be a good opportunity for Cleveland because their pitching, their starting pitching is just not, it's injured. That's not why they're winning. Bullpen's been good and the offense has been better than expected. So good for Cleveland. No shame in that. That's one where, you know, you get one in Atlanta, you're feeling good. You got to be feeling good there.
If I remember correctly, the Orioles had a similar series last year where they went to Atlanta and lost like three admirable games or lost two admirable games. And it was like, that's a good showing. Very nice.
We'll take it.
And then again, like the Guardians have done this with like a pretty mediocre showing from Jose Ramirez so far.
Oh, yeah.
Josh Naylor exploding into just an elite hitter. I mean, he's been one over the last like 365 days. He's been one of the best hitters in the world. So, Josh Naylor. Kudos to you. A couple more. Let's just fly through these. Reds at Rangers. Rangers take two out of three in this one. Eovaldi is nails in game one. Game two is like, or sorry, Marcus Semien hits a go-ahead solo shot late. Game two was like the Jonathan India game. He goes 4-for-4 with a homer and four RBIs. That
badly. He'd been really bad and he was sick. He missed a couple of games. Again, like, he was such an interesting situation coming into the year. They had all this infield depth. They signed Candelario. We thought Marte was going to be there. Candelario has been really bad. Marte gets suspended. You know, McClain gets hurt. And now it's suddenly like, well, we can't trade India now. It was really bad to start the year. You know, he's down to batting seventh. He had been batting leadoff for most of the year. That 4-for-4 game gets his first homer was really good to see. And I think that's going to be big for Cincinnati moving forward.
Hunter Green, right? Strikeout guy. I believe the best start of his career before that point was a 7-inning, 14 strikeout, 1-run game he had against the Mets a couple years ago or maybe last year. Like, I want Hunter Green to like show that he can work a game. that he can get soft outs, that he can go deep, that he can get outs without relying on the strikeout. And that is what he did on Saturday. However, Rangers on Sunday, they win the series. Wyatt Langford, first career home run, is a inside the parker in the first inning. So goofy.
And so goofy. And, you know, like, it was 5-8 feet from being a real homer. It's not like one where, like, it was a line drive, you know, that dropped in front of the center fielder and got past him. Like, it was pretty close to a real homer. So, you know, soon we're coming up on why haven't you homered yet time, Jake. I don't know if we're going to do it later this week. It's almost time to start asking some tough questions. Wyatt Langford, while he has not hit one over the fence yet, I do think he is exempt considering how far and how hard he hit that ball. So good for the Rangers for getting that series. And Cincinnati, they're just trying to find their groove there. But again, that's still one where you've got to feel good getting one in that series. All right.
I disagree on Langford. I think, in my mind, like, congrats, you got close. That's just a sad mentality.
Okay. Well, hey, then on Wednesday or Friday, when we ask, you know, why haven't you homered yet? We'll ask him. We'll ask him. It's true. Come on, you're a strong guy. Wild, let's hit one over the fence.
The Seattle Mariners pitching really good. George Kirby, unbelievable on Saturday, striking out 12 Diamondbacks. The Mariners win Friday and win Saturday. Can't close it out on Sunday. Ketel Marte go ahead double. Gives Arizona the win in the finale. The big story here for me is I am officially worried about Corbin Carroll, who is playing the Mariners in Seattle, where he's from, for the first time. He was in the All-Star game last year, and he played the Mariners, I believe, at home last year. But it was his first time, like, going to Seattle for a three-game set. He went 0-10 over the weekend. That pushes his OPS down to 531. They moved him all the way down to, like, the eighth spot in the order, seventh, eighth in the order. It's very odd. Corbin Carroll, he just does not look right.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where he was struggling, and then he had to go face, you know, George Kirby and Logan Gilbert, and it's a tough assignment, and you hope that it's not. So, because the reason I say that is because what I was going to say is he's just looked very pitchable. Just a lot of weak contact, a lot of just pop-outs, and he's just not on time, or he's not, I can't quite, but it's he's not been good. There's no way around it. And the D-backs offense, they have a weird, you know, they're three games under 500. They have their run differentials out of whack because they won that crazy game in San Francisco where they won by like 16 or 17 runs. But I don't know. I don't know what to make of Arizona. I mean, Fott and Ciccone were awesome. Now that's because the Mariners offense also still kind of sucks and is striking out a ridiculous amount. They're pitching so good that they've been able to win four series in a row now, I believe. But yeah, listen. If the Mariners want to win the series this week against Atlanta, they're going to have to put up some more runs, because as good as the pitching is, you're not holding down Atlanta to this degree. Maybe they are, because that's why this is a talk about true test, because the Mariners offense has still been just no bueno.
Barry Bonds Bowl in San Francisco, Pirates, Giants, not a whole lot of runs scored. Barry wouldn't have been proud. I believe there were like 14 runs scored in total between the two teams all weekend long. Saturday's game, which the Pirates won, was my favorite of these three. I watched a lot of this.
Really good.
Jordan Hicks versus Martin Perez. Hicks throws 1,000 miles an hour. Martin Perez throws like 88. Okay. And that goes to extra innings. The Pirates hit a two-run shot in the top from Brian Reynolds, and then a solo shot from Brian Hayes. Then Jorge Soler just pieces one in the bottom, but the Giants still lose by one. Just crushes it. Jerry Jones was kind of meh on Sunday, which was unfortunate.
The most human he's looked.
Yeah. Thairo Estrada and Mike Yastrzemski going deep against him. Neither of these teams are inspiring too much confidence, I have to say. The Pirates have trailed off pretty quickly after that.
Yes. They have the same record now, Giants and Pirates. Keaton Wynn's awesome. He's really fun. If you like splitters, he's throwing more of them than literally any pitcher right now. And that was true last year as a rookie. So he's really fun to watch. That was nice to see. And then Kyle Harrison, you know, was good as well. So there's, again, right, I've been the high guy in the Giants. Reasons for concern, but I think they can kind of get it going here.
There's no takeaways for me. Like, there's nothing definitive yet for the Giants. Royals at Tigers in a battle of AL Central upstarts. Got to give the AL Central some love. All those teams have been better than we thought. Like, their records against non-division opponents is way higher. Also, it helps that the White Sox are a catastrophe. But the Tigers took 2 out of 3 against the Royals behind a wonderful Tarik Skubal outing on Sunday. I still am very concerned about Detroit's lineup. Spencer Torkelson looks horrible. I know that he has not homered yet. Okay, I'm very well aware.
Yeah.
He's sitting with a goose egg.
But however, he's leading the league in doubles. But I agree. I mean, it doesn't excuse how not awesome he's looked, but he's gotten close. He's gotten close a couple times.
Wensiel Perez
is
a rookie for the Tigers who is just mashing right now. He's hitting third for them.
Playing center. He's like a kind of a utility guy. I guess they're just using him at center and he's hitting really well. I agree with you. I would say every day I am more encouraged by Detroit's pitching and less encouraged by the offense. So I still like the bullpen. Love Jason Foley. And yeah, and listen, it wasn't it was a couple ugly bullpen outings for Kansas City, but their Friday win was really impressive. They poured it on late after like kind of a pitching duel all day long. I watched most of that game. And these two teams, again, we pair them up coming into the year, and I think that all of their series are going to be close. It's credit to Detroit for coming out on top, but I still like Kansas City a little bit more.
Is a combined Tigers Royals roster better than the Braves?
Probably not. Ooh,
heck of a rotation.
It's a pretty good rotation, yeah, but. That's probably not, but it's better than a lot of teams. That's which a year ago we would not have said that about these two teams combined.
Our last series, the Theo Epstein Bowl with the Red Sox taking 2 out of 3 from the Cubs at Fenway. Imanaga, masterful Friday night.
He is delightful. Him giving up the homer to Tyler O'Neill and having that reaction where he turned around and he was like, damn, like he got me. Right back to work. Let's keep on going. Let's keep on cooking. He's so much fun.
He's so much fun. He looks so unimposing. Like it is, maybe this is, it's a dumpy body. Like he does not like.
Yeah, he doesn't. The kind of athlete that he is, it's clearly graceful. It's clearly a good delivery. But yeah, it's not.
Because it's not Yamamoto is also short, right? But he's like this spry. Kind of wiry, like,
and it's still sort of loose. Explosive in a way.
It's explosive like when he's Imanaga just looks like he's the greatest men's league pitcher of all time. He's got a bit of a pouch. Yeah. He's nails. I'm all in. Everyone over the winter who was like, maybe Imanaga is better than Yamamoto, you hold on to that lottery ticket because that's looking pretty good. Don't cash that out quite yet. The Red Sox, though, bounce back with wins on Saturday and Sunday. Tyler O'Neill, Canadian Popeye, goes yard on Saturday, ninth homer of the season. That's how many home runs he had last year. He has already equaled his total from last season. Shouts out to Tyler O'Neill. And then, so they win that game 17-0. A lot of position players threw. Pablo Reyes threw for the Red Sox up 17. Mm-hmm. The Cubs.
I think Trevino threw up winning with the Yankees yesterday, too.
And the Cubs threw Matt Mervis out there. And I think they also had Patrick Wisdom pitch. Like, it was a lot of position players pitching over the weekend. Sunday game, Boston's up 4-0 late. They bungle that. Mike Tauchman, game-tying homer. However, O'Neill comes through with like a bloop single to left field to score Jarren Duran for the walk-off winner. Red Sox take 2 out of 3. This team is so weird. They're so weird. I'm so happy we get a movie.
Yes. And it's like we say, oh, man, I can't wait to watch that. Again, every single one of these games is going to be 8 seconds in the documentary. The thing quickly on the Cubs, Jordan Wicks scratch. That is concerning. I wrote a lot of words about the Cubs rotation on Friday, which you can check out, basically just checking in on all of their starters. Kind of stock up, stock down. What is this rotation going to look like when everyone's healthy? And then Wicks was scratched the next day, right? And so that's the nature of trying to project any starting rotation right now, is you never know when someone else is going to go down. But Ben Brown really struggled. And, you know, I know Wesneski was kind of called up for the spot start. It's just a lot of moving parts with that Cubs rotation, especially with Hendricks. Is he going to really get the rotation spot when he comes back again? Steele's going to be back soon, though, and that's going to be big for them because he's obviously one of the best pitchers in the National League. So the Cubs are another team where I look at the record, I'm like, damn, they're good. And then I watch them and I'm like, I don't know. So we'll see. They've been impressive, though. I think that they still have absolutely a chance to kind of move themselves into the favorite category of the NL Central.
All right. That's it. That's the show. I'm about to get into the car and drive down to Camden Yards in Baltimore, where the Yankees are going to take on the O's in an AL East showdown. Mm-hmm. I'm excited about that just because the rest of the division, at the beginning of the year, we thought it was going to be a four-horse race with the Red Sox kind of out of it. The Rays have looked pretty bad, and the Blue Jays have been fine, but Bo and Vlad have not inspired confidence. And so it looks like it's going to be a bit of a Yankees-Orioles battle for this division.
As we sit now,
so these games are huge. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I will maybe also be seeing a baseball game tomorrow, but I'm not going to say what it is quite yet. But if I do go, you will definitely hear me talk about that on Wednesday. We will also be having a special guest on Wednesday. Looking forward to that. But until then, thank you all for listening. Thank you to Andrew Hartz for producing. You can email us at baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. That's BARBcast. And we will talk to you later this week.